quieres que Curry es tu favorito a los que están en cabeza de carrera, ¿eh?
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and this is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. I'm at Formigal at the end of stage 15 of the Vuelta a España, and for the second day in a row, the race has burst apart in quite the most extraordinary fashion. It could well be that Team Sky and Chris Froome have made a mistake today that ends up costing Froome the Vuelta a España title that he looks in such good position to take with that time trial coming up on Friday. But the race has been unpredictable right from the start. I say that, but this morning everybody I spoke to was anticipating fireworks from the gun because it's such a short stage, 118.5 kilometres, and right from the start, Alberto Contador, a couple of Tinkoff teammates, were ready to light it up, make attacks that forced a group clear, and Nairo Quintana and Movistar were also willing to take advantage of that, and they got away quickly, opened the gap, and Team Sky were, well, frankly, nowhere to be seen. It could well be that they're paying a heavy price for yesterday when they didn't really have anybody in the break and they spent all day chasing on arguably the hardest stage of the race. And today they have paid a big price. As I'm talking to you now, the lead group, which is still 13 riders, are just reaching the bottom of the climb to Formigal. In that break then are the race leader Nairo Quintana, Alberto Contador, David de la Cruz, Davide Formolo, Kenny Elizonde, Gianluca Brambilla, Yuri Trofimov, Jonathan Castroviejo, Omar Fraile, Moreno Moser, and the other couple of riders in there are Mamikin and Rovni of Katusa. Chris Froome is on his own. He has no support from Team Sky teammates at all. He hasn't had pretty much all day. He's had to rely on roping in a bit of help from elsewhere, notably from Orica Bike Exchange, because Esteban Chavez and Simon Yates have also missed that group that's got away. And for reasons that may well become clear later, Astana have been chasing as well. So that's the situation with the time gap from the lead group to the Chris Froome group, just about to duck under 2 minutes for the first time today. Well, Nairo Quintana has set the pace all the way up the climb, reluctantly at first, but then when he got to the front, he split the group down and down and down until just Gianluca Brambilla and Alberto Contador were able to stay with him. Eventually, in the last couple of kilometres, Contador cracked, and so into the final 300 metres, it's Quintana and Brambilla. The two are not quite side by side. Brambilla is right on Quintana's wheel. Has he got enough to get past the red jersey, the leader? And there goes Brambilla. He overtakes Quintana. Quintana won't worry about the stage win then. He is extending his lead in the red jersey, and he is striking a huge blow in the quest to try and take that red jersey all the way to Madrid. Gianluca Brambilla wins the stage. Quintana crosses a line just behind him. And now the clock counts down to Chris Froome, because the amount of time he loses today is going to tell us whether or not he still has any chance of winning the Vuelta. A minute and 47 seconds have passed, and here comes Esteban Chavez, third overall this morning, crosses the line at 1:53, trying to limit his losses as best as he can. And now, just coming round the final bend, I can almost, well, I'm craning my neck a bit, but that's no sign of Froome. There we are, Chris Froome in the white jersey, just come round the bottom bend there, and he's got this last little drag up to the line, and the clock is, well, over 2.5 minutes by the time he gets to the line, that's for sure. Being helped by a couple of Sky staff, Iswania Mario Pafundi and the team's press officer, mouth open, gasping for air, coughing very hard. A devastating day for Chris Froome and his chances of winning the Vuelta. Let's see if he said anything. And the answer to that question is no. He's just turned round and he's off down the mountain.
The Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa.
So, Daniel, second night in a row we've had to sit in traffic getting down off a mountain. Whereabouts are we?
We're in Huesca. In Aragon.
Halfway between where we've come from and where we're going. We're breaking our journey, aren't we? As the race is moving south and east, quite a bit of a transfer. We've got to get to Zaragoza and then further on. Well, you have. I'm staying just south of Zaragoza.
Oh, well, you know, you kept that quiet, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I thought I'd ring up the BMC team hotel and see if they had a spare room, and they did. So I'm stopping there tonight.
They've had riders drop out, haven't they?
I think they well have done. Yeah, well, by rights, almost 100 riders could have dropped out today. But we'll come to that in a moment, because the big stories from the Vuelta a España today are that Nairo Quintana and Alberto Contador pulled off quite a coup, didn't they? And Nairo Quintana has gained a lot of time on Chris Froome. Team Sky, the big losers. And Froome is now 3:37 behind Quintana overall. Esteban Chavez has clung on to third place, but he's now at 3:57. Alberto Contador has moved up to fourth. He's 4 minutes and 2 seconds behind. And it was an incredibly aggressive day's racing, wasn't it? It went from the gun, short stage, started at 2:15 in the afternoon. So everybody had a nice morning to plan what they were going to do.
In my case, run the route. That's what I do every morning, Lionel. I run the route. But actually, I did run the first. I was running on the section where Contador attacked. Which came was about 8 kilometres. A bit of an odd circuit, and I don't really know what was the purpose of the circuit around Sabiñánigo. This morning, I wondered whether it was designed to mimic the old race they used to have here. They used to have a pro race or in
they
that
did.
Town. But yeah, it was an odd one, because often you do get circuits around start towns, but they tend to be quite short, and this was quite a long one. Maybe simply to make up the distance, because they wanted to finish in Formigal, they wanted to start in that town, so they just needed to find a few kilometres from somewhere. But it was quite undulating, and one thing that caught my attention was that I think the road must have been relayed yesterday, because the tar was incredibly fresh, there was an awful lot of grit on it, it hadn't really compacted very well, but that was where Contador attacked.
And attack, I mean, he really did give it absolutely everything. Coming down the little descent, he was on the front, pushing it hard. He had a teammate with him, and it all split up. And they got away, and very, very quickly they got a minute and 30 seconds. Now, when I spoke to Dario Cioni, who's Sky Sports Director on this race, he suggested that there had been some kind of crash.
So there was a crash involving Lotto Soudal rider Tosh van der Sander.
And whether or not that created the split that Chris Froome and the whole Sky team were caught the wrong side of, we don't quite know, but that's their, you know, in damage limitation, that is the line that Cioni came out with at the finish. We'll hear from Dario Cioni a little bit later on. But when I was up there at Formigal, the big issue was not just the time that Nairo Quintana had gained and the way that Movistar and Alberto Contador had worked together to make sure they could put Chris Froome on the back foot, and how quickly they got a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then they pressed that advantage. But then, while we were stood up there, it was 53 minutes and 54 seconds, I think, before the gruppetto, the last group on the road of some 100
riders.
Mincers, yeah, well.
It was a bit of a mincing group today, wasn't it?
Dawdling flaneurs, I think they were today. That was a real a huge time gap for a stage of 118 kilometres, a stage that the winner, Gianluca Brambilla, covered the course in 2 hours 54. So, I mean, by rights, they should all have been outside the time limit. And there were murmurings up there amongst the sports directors who were waiting for the group to come in and waiting by their cars for the evacuation down off the mountain. And so let's hear, first of all, from Stephen de Jong, who is the sports director with Tinkoff, Alberto Contador's team, of course. And we were talking quite close to the finish line, while waiting for the gruppetto to cross the line. Well, Stephen, as we wait for the gruppetto, the time cut has gone. Clearly, the organisers will stretch that time cut, but there must be 100 riders in that group, surely.
Yes, so normally they won't pull them out, of course, but you never know what's going to happen. So a few teams will be in trouble, that's for sure, if that's going to happen.
So tell me about what happened at the front of the race right at the beginning.
Well, we wanted to put as much as possible guys in the breakaway. And at one point, Obeta decided to go also in. And Quintana decided to go also in. And the teams in second group, they were not organized to close it down. So they had too much riders in the back. And this third group was immediately on 1 minute 30 because the two groups were chasing each other very, very hard. And that's why the teams behind run out of people. And then, of course, it was obvious that Astana had a lot of interest to defend the ninth place of Scarponi.
Now, sarcasm doesn't come across terribly well in a podcast, Stephen. Obviously, Chris Froome was all on his own. His team was not there, so presumably they had to rope in help from wherever they could get it. You can't tell me that you wouldn't have done the same if Alberto was in a similar position, surely.
You never know what you're doing in that moment, but I'm sure we don't have a budget to do that. That's for sure.
But in terms of the race, it's been a fantastic day's racing. When you knew the situation, did you have to tell the riders, you know, this is a great opportunity, or were they seizing the opportunity without you having to get involved?
No, they knew immediately because the riders, they told, you never know what you're doing in that moment, but I'm sure we don't have a budget to do that. That's for sure.
But in terms of the race, it's been a fantastic day's racing. When you knew the situation, did you have to tell the riders, you know, this is a great opportunity, or were they seizing the opportunity without you having to get involved?
No, they knew immediately because the riders, they talk in between themselves. And, yeah, we could see Froome was not there. We could see Chavez was not there. I was a little bit uncertain if Yates was in second or third group. But he was, in the end, he was in second group. But, no, you could see that it was live on television, so you could see the composition quite good. So we could inform them, and they all knew that it was going to be, yeah, very hard day and spectacular day for television and the audience.
And finally, do you think some of the teams might put pressure on the organisers? Because this time gap hasn't just been missed by, 40 seconds. It's been missed by probably 10, 12 minutes already now, and there's no sign.
No, there's one rider coming up now, but no. No, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to get involved in that decision. It's up to the UCI to make the decision, and we will read it tonight on our way back home in the bus.
I mean, it would set a real precedent, but that's what the rule is for, isn't it? Because really, the gruppetto has a responsibility to limit the losses as best they can, and this is now a significant gap of probably 40 minutes.
Yes, and I think there are some guys in there who can climb, so they could take up the chase a little bit and make sure that that they were in time, but yeah, they gave up, and I don't know what the UCI is going to do. It's up to them. I'm not going to get involved in that.
Well, maybe we'll see 170 riders at the start in Alcanis tomorrow, or maybe we'll see about 55 or 60. I don't know. My bet is that there'll be 170, but you just never know.
We never know, no. We saw some strange positions before already, so we never know.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Well, De Jong not really wanting to be drawn on whether or not the big group of riders should have been kicked out of the race. It would have been unprecedented, wouldn't it, for the jury to make the decision to eliminate that number of riders. But then they were so far out of the time limit. The time cut was 31 minutes 34 seconds, I think, and they were 53 minutes 54 after the stage winner. Realistically, there was no chance, was there, Daniel, that the jury would make an example here and we'd be continuing tomorrow with 50, 60 riders?
No, and the UCI, both the UCI and the teams or the riders who are complaining about this, they have to look back at the precedents of, well, they've been 30 years or 40 years, or I don't know how long this has been going on, but you can't really turn around now and say to those guys in that group, oh, you were so far behind, you must have saved so much energy by not even trying to make the time limit, that this is going to now make you fresh and you're going to be at an unfair advantage, because as I say, every single time a big group has fought, has been outside the time limit in a Grand Tour or any other stage race, they've always been allowed back in. So there was no real incentive there today for them to bust a cut. And this is one of the perils of the very short stages. And time limit always becomes a factor on these stages for a lot of riders, because it is calculated on a percentage of the winner's overall time. And we'll probably see this more and more as we probably get more and more short stages, because as we've seen on this Vuelta, they generally make for a very fine spectacle. But it does feel a bit like, after a stage like today's, it does feel a little bit like arguing about the amount of extra time, amount of injury time added at the end of a 6-7 humdinger to decide the cup final.
Absolutely right, yeah. So we'll get onto the stage in a minute. I just want to make the point, though, that perhaps Movistar and Tinkoff, the reason for their slight grump about this is because Movistar had 8 riders inside the time cut, Tinkoff had 6, Sky had only 1, I think, Chris Froome. And so the issue as the days go on is, you know, Sky will have men to protect Chris Froome. I mean, he's got an awful lot of ground to make up. As you say, it's a bit of a red herring issue. There hasn't really been a precedent of enforcing this rule. It kind of at the jury's discretion. And as you say, Daniel, to use the footballing analogy, it really was a 7-6 win for particularly Nairo Quintana and Movistar. They were on the attack right from the start, seized the initiative, and really pressed home their advantage in quite an impressive way.
Yeah, and Sky really fell apart. And we thought that Sky might be a little bit brittle. They haven't exactly brought their A team to the Tour de France, but by the same token, I think there were certain riders who, well, were unavailable. Nicholas Roach was injured. Geraint Thomas had a very full season with the Olympics. Walt Palzano wanted to target the Tour of Britain, which is taking place at the same time. So for various reasons, they haven't been able to bring their A team. I think they brought a strong team, and then Mikhail Kwiatkowski had to pull out of the race early on. I understand Pete Kenyuk had quite a nasty, well, similar problem to Mikhail Kwiatkowski. Kwiatkowski has had a saddle sore, and Pete Kenyuk was suffering in a similar fashion today, even more painful fashion, I think. But having said that, there's no denying that they did really fall apart to a certain extent. There should have been someone there to get Chris Froome out of trouble.
Yeah, we'll hear from Dario Cioni in a minute. And I asked him whether or not Sky were paying the price for having had to work so hard yesterday. He kind of dodged that, as he sort of dodged everything, really. I mean, it's a difficult one because he's up there on the mountain waiting for the riders to come in. And tactically, the buck kind of stops with him a bit, doesn't it? I mean, I know the riders have to do all the pedalling, but clearly everybody knew that this morning it was going to go from the gun. I went round talking to sports directors, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? 2 or 3, including Max Chiandri, said that Alejandro Valverde, they felt, might be somebody to give it full gas, to use the sports director's language, right from the start, because Valverde is out of contention now and could have done a big job for his teammate Quintana. As it turned out, it was Contador. But Sky, whether or not they were caught out by this crash, their positioning should have been A1 from the very start. And when I watched everyone go to the line, a lot of the Sky riders were quite far towards the back, and they weren't right up on the front row of the grid. Seemed an odd sort of... Today, they should have had the
they were in the mincing zone, weren't they? The mincing zone. We've got the mix zone off the finish. We also have the mincing zone at the back of this sort of start grid. And Lionel, you know, this reminded me very much of the stage of Marseille in the 1971 Tour, which unfortunately I didn't attend because I wasn't born at that point. But very famous stage, one of the most famous stages, one of the greatest stages in Tour de France history, where Eddy Merckx caught Luis Ocaña out and really attacked from the gun on a descent. And the story went, or you speak to anyone who was in that race and today, and they say that Luis Ocaña was still talking to journalists. He was still mincing, in effect. Mincing, you could mince even in 1971. And Merckx took advantage of that. And, you know, just talking to guys over the last few days, Ben King, for example, Cannondale Drapac rider, who's very keen to get into breaks here at the Vuelta. He hasn't got a contract for next year at the moment. But, you know, one day I was speaking to him and he said, oh my God, I'm a long way back. This was as the gun was about to go. He was at the back of the peloton, in effect, before the gun had gone. He said, this could actually affect my chance of getting in a break today. And so for the first, probably the first 10 kilometres on certain days, depending on how wide the road is and various other factors, it could actually affect whether you can cover moves in the first 10 kilometres. And who knows whether that was a factor today.
Well, let's hear from Dario Cioni, the Sky sports director, on his reflections of what was pretty much the worst day for Sky in a Grand Tour since the 2014 Tour de France, when Chris Froome crashed out in early in the first week. This is Dario Cioni. Dario, quite an extraordinary day on the Vuelta. Can you tell me from your perspective what happened?
It was a short stage, pretty hard start, small roads. I think they started full gas as expected. And then on the first sort of downhill, there was a small crash in the front of the first group. And it cut in two. Nairo and Alberto were in the first group. Chris was behind with a couple of teammates, and then the others were in the third group. And the front group went full gas. And we thought we had would try to close it. Tried to close it, couldn't get it back. So after that, we sort of rode tempo.
So it wasn't just a case of being caught out. There was actually a crash that contributed to the split.
I'm not sure, but Chris said something on the radio about a crash. So I think there was a crash. It's part of the game, so it's no excuse.
Do you think that because yesterday was such a hard day, your team had to do such a lot of work, it was probably the toughest day of the race? Well, it was the toughest day of the race. Do you think that had a part to play in the fact that the gap couldn't be closed down?
I think it was a combination of factors at the end. Alberto Saxo and Movistar joined forces, and they're both sort of really strong teams, so strong risers at the front, usually to control. We got a bit of help from Orica at the beginning, but didn't have the right numbers in that chasing group, so that's cycling.
And what about Astana lending a hand? Was there a conversation? I mean, did you say something to get them involved in helping the chase? Because they didn't look to be chasing for a great deal of reason other than Scarponi's place in the top 10.
Yeah, Scarponi moving to top 5. I didn't speak at all with Astana, so it was their decision to take the chase. And you know, as a few guys get out, you can gain positions, or you don't want to lose top 10 positions. So you know, as the gap grows or narrows, there are different interests coming into game, in play, team classification and stuff like that. So everyone is looking a bit after a proper goal.
I don't know what the time gap is now, but it must be over 40 minutes. Certainly the time limit has been passed. I think only two of your riders have crossed the line so far. What do you think will happen? What's your instinct here? Do you think the jury will relax the rule and allow everyone to race tomorrow?
I don't know. It's the jury that takes the final decision, and whatever they decide, be decided.
I mean, there are riders in that group that are better climbers than their performance today would suggest. It's unusual that everyone has taken the decision to kind of sit up. Do you know what's happened back there?
I don't know. We chased for a short period to try to get the two groups back together. Then I think it's the group pit, so it's a bit everybody's responsibility to keep it going. And so I don't know exactly what. I was quite full on thinking about what's happening at the front of the group. I don't know what happened at the back.
And lastly, how do you think this looks now for Chris Froome's chances of winning? Do you think they're completely gone? The time gap between him and Quintana is now significant. I think it would, if it came down to the time trial, it would have to be around 6 seconds a kilometre, which seems too much to close. But there's a lot of racing to go between now and then.
I never say never. You know, even today on the paper looked like you wouldn't expect like a 2-minute gap, and it's probably one of the biggest gaps that have been between the top riders. Chris wasn't the only one caught out, because also in the group with him they had Chivas, Simon Yates and sort of other guys with interest. And I think for sure we are not the winners of the day. We are still there in just second on GC. The win is more complicated than it was this morning. We had a second on GC, got two stage wins with the team. So like at the end, for now, we can still say that the grass is half full.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
So I asked Dario Cioni about Astana's involvement in the chase, which was slightly controversial. Stephen de Jong, we heard earlier, being slightly sarcastic very sarcastic about Astana's motives. He was jokingly saying they must have been very, very keen to protect Michele Scarponi's ninth place overall. It was an odd one, wasn't it? What did you make of it?
Well, it was extremely odd. I spoke to a couple of people down at the buses after the finish. Spoke to Michele Scarponi, asked him. He played a very straight bat, said that, you know, we'd had a terrible first half of the stage, we'd missed the break, so we needed to make amends. But you would have thought that in that situation, I mean, ninth place on overall shouldn't mean an awful lot to them, and really they would benefit from a quiet day, and they would just say, okay guys, we missed it today, but we'll just rest up, we'll cruise in, and we'll live to fight another day. However, when Michele Scarponi got back on the bus, I did actually hear him say, he said to me that we were working with Sky, we were working with Froome, and I'm not sure what that meant, whether he couldn't believe the temerity that I'd shown to ask that question, or whether actually there might have been a grain of truth to it. I also asked Oleg Tinkov what he made of it. We saw Oleg Tinkov, the Tinkov credit systems. Are they still called that? No, they're not called that. Was in 2007. Sorry, the Tinkov team owner. We saw him riding on the course today. He rode the whole course today, I think. And I was told by the Tinkov press officer, Pierre Orfanidis, that Oleg wasn't going to give me an interview, but he might change his mind as soon as he got out of the bus. And sure enough, he got out of the bus moments after the finish. And I said, Oleg, what do you think of Astana's tactics? And I'm going to do the full impression here, Lionel. I hope you're ready. And any children listening, cover your ears. He said, Astana is a shit team, the shittest team in the peloton, and they were shit tactics.
Said a Russian about a Kazakh team. Yeah. So we should take that into account. Yeah, it was a strange one. But then really, when Chris Froome looked around all on his own, no teammates to help, the earlier efforts by to try and rope in some support had basically come to nothing. Orica Bike Exchange lent a bit of a hand.
Were smart, I thought, in not doing too much. Really, and it really showed that they are, I think, focused on third place rather than on winning the... It's a very tall order with a long time trial to come, but yeah. Esteban Chavez really challenge.
Indeed. I mean, I spoke to Neil Stevens, Orica Bike Exchange Sports Director, this morning about their tactics yesterday and the amount of manpower they put into pulling off that move with Simon Yates just to move him up from seventh to fourth overall. Yates has slipped back from fourth to fifth tonight. But really, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a problem. And like you say, with the time trial to come, you know, Chavez is just about narrow favourite just to cling on to that third place. But we really must talk about...
Can I say one more thing, Lionel, before we talk about whatever it is we're about to talk about? Tinkov, Oleg Tinkov, you know, he made it very clear that he doesn't think a lot of Astana's tactics. But there is actually real history between those two teams, and there's a long-running rivalry between those two teams. And who knows, maybe that was the reason that Astana were pulling so hard behind Alberto Contador. Maybe it had more to do with that than any supposed alliance or favour towards Team Sky.
Yeah, and you looked at Contador. I mean, what was motivating him, other than that he always goes down fighting? He would have known, particularly once Quintana was with him, that they were doing an awful lot of damage to Chris Froome's chances. That may not have upset Sean Yates and Stephen de Jong too much as former sports directors of Team Sky, who both left in 2012.
Good point.
You know, this is the thing. I mean, everyone will focus on what were Astana doing, but really there are dozens and dozens of little alliances, whether team or nationality or just friendships.
Also curious, Lionel, that you mentioned, Gianluca Brambilla's stage win. He was actually helped quite considerably today by Ivan Rovni, the gentleman with whom he had a punch-up in the Vuelta 3 years ago and got kicked out.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, God, I mean, there you go. So these little alliances and rivalries, they all come to play a part. But we must talk about Nairo Quintana, because that was impressive. We were speculating last night about how much time he would need for the time trial. He now has 3 minutes 37. I worked out that means that Froome will need to take, assuming everything stays as it is, and that's a big assumption already with a couple of days of climbing still to go, or lumpy stages still to go. Froome's deficit now is the equivalent of taking back 5.8 seconds per kilometre in the 37-kilometre time trial, I think. I hope the sun hasn't frazzled my brain too much. I think that's the mental arithmetic.
You're big on this now, aren't you? Kilometres.
Well, when it comes down to
seconds per kilometre, you're big on this. Is your new thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's how time trials work.
You'll be talking about VAM next.
Oh, no, I'll draw a line at that. But Quintana has, you know, if Movistar were saying, oh, we need 2 minutes, 3 minutes to hold off Chris Froome in the time trial, well, he has that advantage now and is in a very strong position and in very impressive stuff. Although still a bit of hesitation when it came to the final climb. Quintana didn't want to get to the front. He looked a little bit reluctant to get to the front and pull all the way up the climb, but once he was on there, he was very, very strong, and he shredded that group right down to just Contador and Brambilla, didn't he? It was a really impressive display.
Yeah, it was, and very impressive by Movistar generally, I suppose. I think Quintana now is the clubhouse leader, isn't he, in the Vuelta, and Froome needs to pull something Contador-esque out of the bag, and I think that's what Sky have in mind. Dave Brailsford's been sort of mischievously grinning and winking and elbowing people in the ribs and saying, you know, there's more to come, there are more surprises to come in this Vuelta. Where that's going to come, I'm not sure. Obviously, we have one big mountaintop finish still to come at the Aitana on the penultimate
Saturday.
Day.
That's after the time trial, crucially, isn't it? So, I mean, Froome could put himself right back in the picture. You never know.
Yeah, he could. I think it's a big concern, the way the team really folded today. And Koenig was in an absolute fantastic position, riding the race of his life, really, fifth on general classification. For him to finish in the third group, the Gruppetto, is a surprise and a major disappointment for Sky.
Well, let's just hear from another couple of people from the top of the mountain today. First of all, Tobias Lundvigsen of the Giant Alpecin team. Just grabbed a quick word with him because he looked pretty shattered at the top. I wasn't entirely sure which part of the break he'd got into, but he was very active at the start of the stage. So this is Tobias Lundvigsen. Can you tell me a little bit about what the start of the stage was like? Was it as crazy as I imagine?
It was really unbelievable. We knew, everyone knew, it was such a short stage, it would be a really epic day, you know. And, I was not in such a good position when we started, and then there was attacks all over. GC guys went in the break, and then suddenly they stopped, and I decided to bridge up to the group. And it was a good choice, I think, because I don't want to be back there and fight for a time cut, you know.
So what actually happened then? Did it go straight away from the neutralized section as soon as the race was up through kilometer zero?
Yeah, directly when we hit the climb, it was mayhem, you know. It was just attacks all over.
Do you know who started it, from the GC guys, Contador, or was it Movistar?
I don't know who started it, but I think just Contador and Quintana, they followed the guys, and suddenly they were in a big group there in the front.
And so once you got into that group, what was it like? What was the pace like? Was it kind of like every man for himself?
Yeah, it was a really hard day, but everyone know with such a short stage, it's going to be it is one of the hardest days then. Even with such a queen stage yesterday, today it's harder actually.
Wow, so the shortness meant that everybody gave it everything right from the start.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent, thank you very much. Have a good rest this evening.
Thank you.
And finally, Daniel, the Vuelta, it's so late in the day, isn't it? We really are on Vuelta time, and I'm not used to it. I've been parachuted in here for the last week thinking it's going to be like the Tour, but everything happens later. Sometimes
you look like you're suffering, Lionel.
Ah, I mean, I'm turning pink, that's for sure. I was out in the sun without a hat for a long time.
You've also got a kind of pinkish microphone here. It all kind of matches today. Eyes. The skin.
Yeah, bloodshot eyes. Still a long drive to go. Don't want anyone to feel too sorry for me because my dinner has just turned up. But before we go, let's hear from yesterday's stage winner, Robert Hessink. He was at the top, and I asked him just what the stage win meant to him. Robert, 24 hours after that victory yesterday, how does it feel?
Oh, yeah, really special. First time I won a stage in the Grand Tour in my 10th year as a professional already. But always riding for GC, it's really hard to win a stage, and
I always wanted to try and ride a Grand Tour for stages. And this year I got the chance because of Steven Kruiswijk doing a GC here. He dropped out, unfortunately, but and also because of the circumstances with the crash earlier this season. I wasn't good enough to do GC here. So yeah, really a special feeling. I'm obviously in a good shape. So still a lot of hard stages still to come, and hopefully good possibilities there. Yeah.
You came in with the Gruppetto today, I think, 54 minutes down, so kind of gave yourself a bit of a day off as a treat.
Yeah, you could say. Well, the other guys didn't really give us a treat. It was a full war for GC. And in the beginning, I wasn't good at all. My legs were so bad. But that's a bit. The 53 minutes wasn't planned, but to take it easy today, yeah, that was the idea at first. Yeah.
On the Col du Bisque yesterday, you did so much work. You had Kenny Elissonde along as a passenger. Were you concerned at any point, or did you feel that you had the edge?
Yeah, for sure. But the issue was again, Adam Yates was coming from the back, and like last day on Covadonga, I was second behind Quintana, and I was afraid that was going to happen again. So I wanted to keep the speed high. And yeah, also that's my best option to drop others is just to. I mean, I don't have the really sharp acceleration, but I can keep a really high tempo for a long time, and that's more or less my way to drop others. So that's what I tried.
And lastly, you have obviously memories from the Vuelta when you were very high up and finished sixth in the end, and you've had a really difficult time on and off the bike over the last few years. So this must be a really nice one to get hold of a Grand Tour stage win.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the only thing I could say is always keep fighting. I mean, obviously some bad luck every now and then on the bike. That's part of our job. Things beside that, family and stuff. That's something you don't have a grip on. And I still love my job, and I love to train, and I love to work hard. And really, like days like yesterday, make it all worth it.
Well, a packed episode, Daniel. Feels like we've kind of sketched over a little bit the significance of what's happened on the road today. Nairo Quintana really has taken a giant step forward to winning this race. Chris Froome's going to have to come up with something similarly spectacular. But today, for me anyway, just showed that bike racing is at its best when the riders are able to race for the entire stage. I saw a couple of comments on Twitter about, you know, a rider going off the front at the very start, 115 kilometres from the start, 115 kilometres from the finish. No one would attack 115 kilometres from the finish of a, say, 180 or 200 kilometre stage. But because it was so aggressive so early, and that group was large, and they were all sharing the work early on, I know the Tinkoff riders had more to gain and they pushed it on early, but there were a lot of riders who had an interest in trying to get away, get enough of an advantage to perhaps win the stage. It made for really dynamic, exciting racing, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And the pressure on race organisers, the momentum that this trend of shorter stages is creating is almost becoming irresistible. I mean, you know, why were bike races up until very recently typically 250, 300 kilometres long? It's because that bike racing was originally conceived as a sport, as a discipline that really tested the limits of human endurance. And it's changed. It's essentially there, although cycling hasn't done a very good job of really culling and plundering TV money and so on. It is essentially there as entertainment, as a spectacle, you know, to provide oxygen for sponsors. And so it has to kind of mold itself into the most attractive package possible. And increasingly, the most attractive package looks to be, you know, the sort of 100 to 150 kilometer stages where you can go over huge climbs, or you can go over multiple huge climbs in a stage, but it's all contained within sort of 3-4 hours. You can show the whole thing on television, and it's very hard to argue with the package that the Vuelta has offered up this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, 3-hour long stage, you wouldn't have been bored if you'd sat and watched 3 hours of that today. Whereas if you watch 3 hours of, say, a 5-hour stage, where perhaps all the action's been in the first hour, not televised, and then you just have the pattern of the break being chased and then caught and then the fireworks at the end, it is a much more appealing package for TV. I suppose the other thing from the race organisers' point of view is plotting a route that takes in enough of the country. But really, the TV audience, they're not that bothered, are they?
They don't really care
whether it owned, the Vuelta is a bit stuck very much to the roof of Spain, and then there's this bit of a transfer, and then it's down in the sort of the east, southeast bit. For the final few days, then that doesn't register for them where exactly we are. So as long as there are places that are able to, accommodate the race, why not have a? Particularly the Vuelta seems to be making itself into a race which is much more bang for its buck than either the Giro or the Tour.
But not for everyone. You know, I mean, I mentioned Patrick Lefebvre, the Essex Quickstep manager, the other day. He doesn't like it. He thinks it's gimmicky. He thinks it's synthetic. There have been people on social media in the last few days saying that they agree it's not really a grand tour. It doesn't really fulfil those kind of criteria of epic journey or adventure that grand tours ought to fulfil. I think the entertainment, particularly this weekend, has been first class.
Well, more entertainment tomorrow, although perhaps not, because I think it's a downhill run to the sea, isn't it, tomorrow, I think? So maybe one for the sprinter that's left in the race. I don't know who that is, but anyway, we'll be back again tomorrow. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you, Lionel.